America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network, mhnrnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. NASA's long-awaited James Webb Space Telescope, launched on Christmas Day, is called the greatest astronomical observatory ever built, a telescope 100 times as powerful as the Hubble that will show us as never before light emitted from objects more than 13 billion light-years away, allowing us to peer back in time, to view the infancy and perhaps even the birth of our universe. That's Big Bang stuff. And we've seen that time and again from NASA, if you've lived long enough, to see them landing on the moon and sending a rover to Mars. But today, a lot of the activity in space is being designed by the private sector. Barons like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Richard Branson. Their motivations and their objectives are different. We'll talk about all of that today as we trend in space on America Trends.
With us on America Trends is Professor Mike Gruntman, and he is a professor of astronautics at the University of Southern California. And of course, there's a lot more activity in space these days, Professor Gruntman, and I want to bring that to the audience today. We had done a podcast, I'd say 2 years ago, based on a book called Space Barons. And these space barons that we're talking about, of course, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, they're bringing great new life to the topic of outer space. What do you think about the efforts that are going on? They're very competitive. They have different objectives. What impresses you most?
It is a very broad area, space exploration. It's the space enterprise is very broad, so it's important at first to put in perspective. Until approximately the mid-1990s, government space dominated activities in space. It's primarily for national security and exploration. The latter is NASA-type missions. In the mid-1990s, commercial space grew and became bigger than government space, and today commercial space driven by profits by private entrepreneurs is much larger than government base. If I'm not mistaken, today we have about $450 billion worldwide space activities, and only $100 billion approximately is government space worldwide, and the United States government dominates these government activities in space. So it's a very big commercial space. There are a lot of applications, a lot of technology. It is a very important development because space is becoming a normal activity for the humanity, normal, quote-unquote, in the sense that it's not only government programs, some of them secret, some of them pure science, fundamental science. So this it was very important when the private individuals such high-charging private individuals as Elon Musk moved into this field 2000s, about 2003, 2004. And Musk really changed the way how the commercial space operates. And when I'm saying commercial space, United States overwhelmingly dominates global activities, although other countries are trying to get into that. But historically, in the United States, commercial space industry or rocket industry or space launch industry was very active, actually, from the first days of the World War II, when the first commercial companies were established to build rockets. in the United States to support the war effort. And again, in Europe, it was only the government in those days, and then the Soviet Union, China, only government and only commercial space recently is taking off in Europe as well. It was very important when Elon Musk moved into this field because he completely changed the way how business is done. He disrupted to a significant degree all aspects of business. Today, even the national security space relies on SpaceX's launchers that, again, change the way how the business is done. So it was a very important development to make spaces truly big. And the government agencies like NASA played a major role. Actually, the NASA administrator, Mike Griffin, under President Bush the younger, he pushed very strongly a commercial element to bring commercial companies to start flying astronauts to the International Space Station, for example. So in this program, commercialization of space continued through the years of the Obama administration and through the Trump administration and continues now. So now that we have these very powerful individuals with a lot of cash on hand, and they are spending it for their fancy ideas, it's great because it advances technology. It brings a lot of side benefits, and space always brought a lot of benefits to our life. And the global positioning system is an outstanding example, although it was developed originally to support national security applications, the warfighter. So today, the cab drivers don't know how to read maps.
Well, thank goodness.
And I'm looking at the students in the classroom again, and I have to tell them, you know, a map, it was such a paper thing that you can fold and put in the back pocket, and they look at me.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned Elon Musk. So you didn't answer the question necessarily about which one of these impresses you most, but the fact that you only mentioned him. He has transported astronauts and cargo to the International Space Station. He's very ambitious. He sees a spaceship going to the moon and Mars. Mars clearly is an objective of his. So tell us, is he the most ambitious of the three in terms of the programs that they're designing?
Yes, a short answer is absolutely affirmative. He came early to that, and his ambition is really to go and settle on Mars, which is very unlikely happened during his lifetime, but he's the breadth of activities of SpaceX, his company, is significantly larger than what Bezos and Sir Richard Branson do in space. Though again, they're doing very important things, and to a significant degree, they are complementary because what Virgin Galactic, for instance. So because of that. Because they're complementary, a little bit difficult to compare them who is bigger and more consequential. But activities by Musk are much more broader. His company is much broader. Though there are wonderful developments that all three of them are bringing into space. For example, what Virgin Galactic did, Richard Branson's company, they really came up with this idea that a normal person could sit like in an airplane, take off horizontally, get to the suborbital altitude to look at the Earth a few minutes in weightlessness, and then land back again as an airplane. So this is a highly unusual and comfortable and convenient way for passengers. And if I look at Blue Origin, what Jeff Bezos did with his billions of dollars that he consistently invested for 4 years, a lot of technology development came out. It's a little bit technical question, but in rocket propulsion, where the big rocket engines are being built, there was historically used a combination of a kerosene-type fuel and liquid oxygen, or LOX. And for some reasons, for a few decades, there was no development of the natural gas as a fuel, and methane as a fuel rather than kerosene-type propellant. Although from the point of view of technology, it was obvious for many specialists that it has some advantages and just could be very effective. And for decades, for a variety of policy reasons, programmatic reasons, government didn't put money into that. Commercial industry couldn't do it. It's very expensive. But Jeff Bezos began putting his billions of dollars consistently for a number of years, and now his ship would be flying that, a very big engine, and actually the biggest, another very big rocket provider, or space launch provider in the United States, the United Launch Alliance. It's a merger of launch operations of Boeing and Lockheed Martin in the past. They formed a joint company in 2006. So the next generation rocket by the United Launch Alliance, Vulcan space launcher, would be using this natural gas, methane, and liquid oxygen engine. So there's a lot of technology developments coming out. They're complementary, but they're also competing. All of them are superachievers, and they have obviously elements of vanity, no doubt about that. But they are fascinated with space.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned it, some of the other companies that we think of as being at least out there in terms of flight, Boeing and Lockheed Martin. So there are many space barons into the future potentially, because there are hundreds of space startups, everything from satellite technology to orbiting hotels. Is this going to be their greatest legacy, the three of them?
In a fundamental way, the switch that is being taken place to transition from the systems that are designed by the government and implemented by the industry to the situation when government provides requirements and then buys services from the industry. And this is very similar to what we have with the aircraft. The government today doesn't design fighter planes or bombers. It simply produces the requirement, and then industry comes up with the designs and builds these wonderful vehicles, and government then buys 200 fighter planes, F-35 or other models. So a similar situation is being developed in space, and this is again what started in 2000s on the NASA side under Mike Griffin as the NASA administrator, and then continued throughout the Obama administration, throughout the Trump administration. So rather than industry to build the space vehicles according to NASA's design, so now Elon Musk is building his rocket launcher, his spaceship, and then government simply buys to send astronauts to the International Space Station for so many million dollars per seat per flight. Government still develops, continues to develop programs where commercial industry couldn't work, and this is the space launch system to take astronauts beyond the low Earth orbit to the moon and later to Mars, although the commercial industry also wants to take part in this, and obviously Elon Musk plays a major role in this enterprise, in this move there. So they even going to the moon, there are components that will be designed by the industry, and the government would simply buy these services. So it's a major transition in the way how the entire industry operates, and these entrepreneurial companies of the type of Blue Origin or SpaceX, this is the way how they live, how they operate. And this is very different from the culture of our legacy companies such as Boeing or Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, three of these giant legacy companies. So it's not easy for a big company to switch that did this that operated in the old way for decades and very successfully operated to switch to this new way of doing business. So there are a lot of tensions and frictions in the industry, But it's very healthy because there is a competition now, and there's a disruption also in the way how things are being done. And the technology and space exploration and operations in space advance. Now, what our competitors do, as you asked, mm-hmm. primarily the world continues to operate on the government-based programs. Although in Europe, there is a big interest to the commercial space because they see what happened in the United States and some European companies, even some rather large companies are looking into that and try to imitate what the United States is doing. There are also small startups, but again, there's the legacy of or the culture of the commercial space or commercial rocketry is not present in Europe. As I mentioned, in the United States, at the very beginning of World War II, two companies were created to build rockets. It never happened in any belligerent countries during World War II. So it was, again, pure American, this culture of commercial enterprise working with the government. Now, there are two huge countries with the tremendous potential. It's Russia that inherited from the former Soviet Union's tremendous space expertise, and the People's Republic of China that steadily is developing its ballistic missile, space launcher, and space capabilities since the very late of 1950s when the Soviet Union transferred some ballistic missile technology to the communist China. So these countries are not exactly free market countries as we understand them, as we understand free market. So because of that, whatever new stories we're hearing, there's the private company is doing this or that in Russia or in particularly in China, it is not really the same type of commercial activities as we have in the United States, because all the government is involved, and it's when, say, for example, a Chinese company talks about its profitability in space or rocket technology, you cannot really say what is really happening because most of the products are being bought by the government, and the government establishes these companies. You cannot do anything without being blessed by, say, the Chinese Communist Party, because in these communist totalitarian systems, all of them, if you look at the former Soviet Union or National Socialist Germany in 1930s and 40s or People's Republic of China, about 10% of the total population are members of the ruling party. So if you remove children, if you remove people who do not work, it will tell you that one-third or one-quarter of an active population, they are members of the Communist Party or National Socialist Party in Germany. So whatever is happening in the private, quote-unquote, enterprise there must be blessed by this overwhelming political structure that dominates the entire country.
Okay. Now, let me ask you. Elon Musk has yes. criticized his rivals for attempting to generate profits as opposed to SpaceX, which has the stated goal of making life multi-planetary. Now, again, he's got the most ambitious efforts if he ever goes to Mars, or they do. But we've been basically talking about suborbital or barely orbitable efforts of Branson and Bezos. And, of course, they're talking about tourism. They're talking about joyrides into space for the wealthy, ultimately coming down to where airlines were at the beginning and making it really high speed. Though I think Musk has been talking about that, too, that it's going to be so fast to get from San Francisco to New York. So tell us, I mean, where do you think the action is going to be in the coming years?
It is a very broad field, so you will see action in many areas, and in many elements of what you see are complementary. And again, what Bezos, Branson, and Musk do, it complements each other to different ways. Elon Musk never focused really on suborbital flight. From the business point of view, For tourists, suborbital flight may become much bigger than going into the low Earth orbit, because this is something, the latter is something that Elon Musk has in his plans, to send tourists on orbital flight and perhaps to space hotels, as other companies are advocating. But this would be much, much more expensive, and also would require significant training and the medical screening of the individuals. But going for a few minutes into suborbital flight, this is what Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin did recently, would require much less stringent requirements from the medical point of view, a few hours of training. So it's almost any normal healthy person would be able to do it. So commercially, it will be much cheaper as well, because the technology that is needed for a suborbital flight is much simpler and not that sophisticated. So because of that, there may be much larger number of customers. So from the business point of view, rather than serving dozens of very expensive customers, maybe serving thousands of customers with a couple hundred thousand dollars paying for a ticket would be much more attractive from the business point of view. So what they're doing is complementary, but certainly what Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic recently did, this is a breakthrough. It may open truly space tourism. So far, and this is not a real orbital space tourism, but this is a very important step. It's like I'm in Los Angeles, it's like establishing tours to go to San Francisco. It's still not flying to Paris, which was much more expensive for a vacation, but just going a 1 hour flight to San Francisco from LA, this is something affordable to many, many more people than spending a month in Paris or in New Delhi, for example.
Scientifically, what should we be focused on? In other words, Mars is really attractive because we've been wondering whether there's life on Mars or whether it could be sustained on Mars. But I know that Jeff Bezos has been talking about a moon base, and certain people may get a little blasé about the moon because we've been there. But scientifically, what do you think is the best place for us to go?
It is a very difficult question, because going to the moon, it's or Mars, it's primary support of humans going there. And in my view, we cannot go directly to Mars. We can send humans to Mars perhaps in 10, 20 years, but this will be like a one-time adventure. Really, having a sustainable human presence on Mars would require at first to establish a sustainable presence on the moon, because a lot of technologies need to be developed. There are a lot of dangers, so we still don't know how to do this. Artificial gravity is not there. All kind of pure scientific and engineering questions needs to be resolved, and the only way for humans really to establish a sustainable presence on Mars is at first to establish a sustainable presence on the moon. From the science point of view, it's a little bit different area, because it's we're interested in the universe and the origin of the solar system. We want to explore planets. This is what NASA does. And here, different scientists have different ideas, and it's always a major challenge in space exploration for our statesmen, and unfortunately very few politicians are statesmen, to guide the scientific enterprise. If you think about this, we have many more proposals to send missions to different planets, for example, than funding is available, and all these proposals are compelling science. For example, if a proposal comes to send a spacecraft to Mars and another proposal to send a spacecraft to Venus, where would you spend money? Because you have money only for one mission. Again, you always have more wonderful, compelling science proposals than funding. And this is a major challenge, how to choose, what to choose. And here, obviously, a lot of political stuff is coming, which senator in which state is much more powerful, could affect this or that. A lot of political games in Washington are happening. And there are a large number of competing, compelling science proposals. Astrophysicists want to build a bigger telescope. In my day job, I'm engaged in exploration of the interstellar boundary of the solar system. This is the boundary approximately 100 times farther away from the sun than our Earth. This is where the solar wind collides with the surrounding interstellar medium. So we are interested in that, and the space is very expensive. Such exploratory missions, whether to Mars or Jupiter or to this interstellar boundary of the solar system, they are approaching $1 billion price tag. So it's a pretty expensive, and where the money should go, how to determine that, again, we need statesmen in Washington, and unfortunately very few people among politicians are statesmen.
Well, let me ask you, Jeff Bezos said about the critics of these billionaires going to space, he said, they're mostly right. Are they? Because a lot of people are saying, oh, this is fanciful. This is another example of income inequality. They should be spending their money on the human needs here versus what benefit into the future this might provide. How do you look at that question?
First of all, these are private money, and these private individuals should be able to spend the way that they want. And if people are unhappy with that some individuals could accumulate such enormous wealth, this is more about the tax code and the general policies. But today these people have these funds, and spending on the advancing space has tremendous side benefits as anything we do in space. It produces new technologies. It's also excite and inspire younger people to study science and engineering, and rather than being excited in soft areas and try to control the lives of other people, they would be. We need more engineers, we need bridges, we need roads, we need rockets, we need satellite technology. We cannot have a population that technically ignorant. We will pay price for that. So this excitement of the young people to go to the hard areas, and studying engineering and science is harder than many soft areas where you can wave hands basically and do talking, and we need that kind of expertise. It's also national security component because the
country. Yeah, no, I want to get into that, but I want to ask you, you talked about the greatest scientific benefit that might come out of all of this. Let me ask you about the benefit to human beings right here on Earth related to, for example, Jeff Bezos' idea that he wants to offload a lot of industrial activities to another place so that we can sustain the Earth during this period of great flux and climate change. And others are suggesting, well, let's enhance basic air travel, shorter flight times. I mean, when you look at it, where do you think this is headed in terms of benefit to us on Earth, let's say in the next 20, 30, 40 years?
The offloading the industrial capacity is not going to happen to a significant degree during the next 20, 30 years. It's probably much more a longer-term proposition. Although certain elements may happen, certain technologies may benefit this ultra-deep vacuum of space and low gravity, that kind of things. But we don't see really a big commercial outcome there. So it is much, much longer time horizon. There are also talks about creating this very fast flight from one point to another. And on the national security side, people have been looking for that for decades, how to deploy a platoon of Marines on the other side of the globe in 1 hour or something like that. There are some benefits for that. But otherwise, the technology in general advances, and we have to keep in mind that whatever is being spent in space is a pretty small fraction of everything else that we do on the ground. And if we read in the newspapers occasionally about the level of fraud and waste in government programs, it's space is peanuts compared to that. So my personal view, when somebody just brings an issue, we should rather spend money not on space but on something else, just look at the government programs on the all kind of bailouts where the incompetent performance is being rewarded or tolerated at least. And again, the level of that is dwarfs what we spend on the space. It's the total United States government, for example, spending in space is about $60 billion per year. It's NASA one third, Department of Defense one third, and the intelligence community one third.
So almost a rounding error. Well, let me ask you, as you've hinted at the Space Force, the newest branch of the military, and they are there protecting our satellites, our gear in space. And you might want to help us understand how much gear is up there and how important it is to life on Earth. I think most of us, if we think about it, everything boings up there and comes back to us. But how important do you think the Space Force is?
It is a very interesting development that space activities are certainly very important for national security, and this importance is tremendous. For example, it came to the real forefront during the first war in Iraq, when Bush, the senior president, and led the coalition of forces to expel Iraqis from Kuwait that they invaded. So this was the first time when the impact of space capabilities on the warfighter on the ground was so tremendous that it led to the major enhancement of various things that are being done in space in support of national security, and this became more and more entrenched, embedded in the military operations. And it's because it is so important, and the United States had so much advantage in this area, other countries noticed that and are developing technologies to try to counteract this, sometimes not necessarily directly, but in asymmetric way. And the Space Force is here to consolidate operation in space, to get handling on the existing assets. And this is, again, it's a multi-billion dollar systems are flying in space. And also to develop ways to protect them, because, again, there are near-peer rivals who are developing very powerful systems that would disrupt this advantage. So this is a really new battlefield. It's interesting that other country, the rival country, the Soviet Union in the past, established a special branch of armed services, analog to Space Force, and then disbanded that, so it's and then reinstated it again. So there was an experimenting with creating a new branch of in the armed forces in the peer country, in the Soviet Union in the past. So what United States did is it's very important, because space now became so big and so consequential to what we do. One thing I can bring, just a very small example. Our space assets are important. If we again go back to the Cold War time, an attack on particular system that was deployed in space, a system that detects a launch of ballistic missile on the ground, the attack on these satellites would have been considered in the same way as an attack on the ballistic missile silos. Because, again, if you take out that system that provides early warning of ballistic missile attack. This is a clear indication that half an hour later there will be a launch of the thousands of ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, attacking the adversarial country. So in all these negotiations with between the Soviet Union and the United States during the Cold War on arms control, it was always considered that, yeah, so if you touch this system, it's the same as attacking our, submarines with ballistic missiles or ground silos on the ground. So even in those days, space was so important. And now with proliferation of the reconnaissance satellites, space imagery, we all familiar, we see sometimes in the news when the commercial space imagery is being used to provide the background or a context to some events that are happening in the world. We see it again probably once a week on the news, space imagery. So it is, again, an indication that it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And there's a tremendous reliance on these systems. And again, the global positioning system that can be disrupted by a powerful country, adversarial country, is an example how important it is, because people, again, don't know how to find a way without GPS now.
Oh, absolutely. As a professor of astronautics, how excited are you that our us once again are back on the skies and outer orbit? How important is this from the standpoint of the next frontier? That's how it's always been described.
Certainly, being in the field makes me proud and excited to be there. And also proud, I mean, because in a very small way, I also just contribute to that. And I'm not only being part of NASA missions, science missions, and part of some cooperation doing things with the industry or other parts of the government, but also by educating the workforce for this great American space enterprise. We built up a very large program, probably on the master's level. It's one of the largest programs in the country, pure space engineering, not aerospace that mixes aeronautics and astronautics, but we're a pure space program. And we see the excitement among young boys and girls, men and women coming to our program as undergrads, or the graduate students coming to the master's program and the PhD, how they're excited about space. Space attracts people. It really excites this new generation of scientists and engineers. And again, this technical expertise is essential for the country on the different levels. It's not only national security, but also economic prowess. And we're in a very competitive world. And if you don't occupy a certain field, and if they're an adversarial country or not exactly friendly country would occupy that field of science, technology, economy, it may have a very consequential effect. May have a consequential effect on our lives and economy. So it is just very important. And again, space attracts interest, and we have a lot of very excited young men and women coming to our programs, and we are glad that we can help them to find a way and prepare them for the exciting careers in a space industry.
And it would seem, by what you've said throughout the course of this conversation, that America still has a leadership position. We sometimes question America's leadership in different fields and areas today, but in space, I think it's pretty clear. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Professor Mike Gruntman, a professor of astronautics, and you might want to look into his program at the University of Southern California. Maybe it's right for you or your child or grandchild. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today here on America Trends.
Thank you.